weekend is not complete without the First Lady of New York Radio. It's the Joan Hamburg Show, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Women are always saying to me, I'm a certain age, what am I going to do? I don't have a really substantial career. And I always say, you can do whatever you want to do. You just have to really want to do it and go for it and not worry if it may not work the first time. Maybe it will work the second time or the third time, but giving up is not a good option. I often use people like Joy Behar as an example, who's been working as a single mother since she was a young woman in New York and did it all and never gave up on it and has done an enormously successful body of work. And she does so many things besides just doing her TV show or whatever else she does. And she doesn't even seem tired. So I'm very curious as to the secret. Is it that lasagna that she talks about? What could it be that keeps her going? Welcome, Joy Behar. What is it? I mean, you work really hard. People don't understand how hard it is to do a daily show, plus all the other things.
You know, I don't find it that hard because if you make things fun for yourself, if you can. I mean, I can't do it every day, but like today I was just having fun. This whole week I just had fun. I was ridiculously silly on the show, quoting a chicken. There's a chicken on Instagram that just screams out the name Maria, which makes me laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, on the other hand, I did another story about an accident on the highway. Did you hear this story?
Wait, what happened?
We were coming home from Long Island. We were at 53 on, exit 53 on Monday. And we're in the HOV lane. And all of a sudden, right in front of us, a man falls out of his car from the passenger seat onto the to the left.
Wait,
of the highway.
He was driving. The car was moving.
The car was moving. He was in the passenger seat, and he fell out of the car. And so all of a sudden, we see an actual body.
Oh my God!
On the highway, and I've never seen anything like that before. The guy who was driving pulled over to the shoulder. And the car that was behind the guy, the body, stopped the car and probably caused a little bit of a skirmish behind him.
Right.
And then we couldn't stop, so we just kept going. And I called 911 and I said, listen, there's a body on the highway. Then I tried to find out what happened, and I saw that Newsday covered it.
What happened?
Well, the guy was inebriated, they said. And they took him to Stony Brook Hospital. I don't know any more than that. I wish someone would tell me. Maybe whoever's listening to your broadcast can find out more and let me know. Because I'm curious, what happened to the driver? What did he think he was doing? Did he think that he was stopped when he fell out of the car or what?
Or maybe he
when you're
didn't.
Drinking, you're not thinking straight when you're drinking.
Right.
So he just, I don't know what, yeah.
He didn't probably close the door because he was probably too drunk. And the door probably slid open, and he was probably too drunk to put on a seatbelt.
Yeah, that could be. That sounds pretty logical. Uh-huh.
Wow, what a weird story.
I know. And it sort of traumatized me for about 2 days.
Well, how would it not?
But it made me silly for some reason, because when you see something like that,
well,
you think to yourself, oh, my God, it's a minefield. Anything can happen anywhere.
I know.
And
you didn't see.
Laugh and have fun.
You didn't see the guy. That's hard to have fun when you see a body who fell out of a car.
I know. But when I realized that he was okay, that he didn't die, he was in the hospital, and that he was drinking, and that's why it happened. It wasn't like a mob hit. It wasn't like the driver pushed him out, which I figured out right away because he wouldn't have pulled over if he had done that. So, but then after you realize all that, you say, oh my God, life is really treacherous at times, you know?
Well, it is treacherous and weird, and especially if someone drinks, because then you can lose control of everything. But Thank goodness everyone in your car was okay, and the guy who fell out of the car apparently was okay.
Yes, yes. We just don't know what happened to the driver.
Right.
I know that the police, after I called 911, we saw helicopters circling, so they came to the rescue, and the guy's okay.
Okay, and, you know, crazy day in New York, too, because we've got presidents here, we've got an event happening with two or three presidents popping up. There's a lot going on.
There must be a complete deadlock for traffic today with three presidents there. Three.
Now, I'm looking out the window of the studio, and it's on 49th Street and 3rd Avenue, and many of the cross streets are just shut down with cops everywhere.
Joan, between that and the bike lanes and all those crazy restaurants out in the streets that have not stopped, who never pulled those restaurants back after the pandemic, the cars are at a standstill.
I know.
I don't know. This traffic is worse than ever in New York City.
It is. And there doesn't seem to be any answer for it. So,
well, they're doing congestion pricing. That's going to go over like a fart in a space suit.
Well, that's all we need. Bad enough to get in a taxi now and pay so much up front.
Yeah, what is that about? Well, you know, it's just getting expensive to live in New York City.
Well, it's
boroughs. Yeah, there are five boroughs, and people have to. A lot of the kids that work in my office, they live in the Bronx. You know, they live far. They live outside of Manhattan. They can't afford it, even with roommates.
No, but we've known that because you and I have lived here since we were very young in New York.
Since dinosaurs roamed the earth,
yeah, of course, and we know what it's like. First of all, even used to be a joke. You know, I live uptown. We would be driving and we'd find a parking spot by accident, you know, look, there's a parking spot. Let's take it.
Yeah.
Even though it was 40 blocks from where we lived, because it was so exciting to find a parking spot.
Well, even the parking lots are so expensive. They're the same. They're the rent of a small apartment.
That's for sure. So how you can tell the audience, how do you manage your life when you've got so many jobs and so much responsibility, whether it's The View on the air, and then you are writing plays and doing all kinds of things. So it isn't just a one job. You've got a day long full of activity.
I do, but they're creative things. And I enjoy writing plays. And hopefully one of my plays, Bonkers in the Burrows, will be produced off-Broadway in the fall. I'm hoping that happens. I have a producer, and we're looking for a director right now. And so, you know, something will come to fruition. What I say to women who ask me that question is I was not always like this. You know, I used to just flounder around trying to figure out what to do with my life. Remember, I didn't start my stand-up career until I was almost 40.
Right.
And before that, I was an English high school teacher. I worked at the unemployment office. I was a sales girl. I did whatever I had to do, raise a kid, be married, get my degree, you know, all that.
Right.
And then I said, you know, I got a divorce. And when you get a divorce, somehow things change a lot. And then I just went for the stand-up comedy thing because I had been funny in the teacher's room at parties. And I thought, how can I monetize this, you know? Extremely scary, very much a lot of pressure, a lot of competition in the business, you know, and as a woman, it was hard. You know, I'd have to follow Robin Williams on a Saturday night at Catch a Rising Star. It's a nightmare.
That is a nightmare.
It. Yeah. And you do it. You know, I did work the Catskills. I worked the Poconos. I traveled around mostly the tri-state area. Because I needed the money, basically. I had to work. And that motivated me to overcome my ego, you know, my ego and my insecurities. Sometimes financial disability helps a lot in a way.
I
just feel like you can start anytime you want. You know, Phyllis Diller was my role model. She started at 40 also.
Right.
Then when she was in her 80s, she stopped doing stand-up. She started painting. You know, a creative person just comes up with something else, and everybody's creative in his or her own way. Whether it's, you know, painting flowers or taking pictures or or starting a Mahjong game, whatever you want to do. But you know, a book club.
Stand up is really painful and hard. And if something doesn't work or it bombs and you're looking at the front row of sort of annoyed faces, how do you get through that?
Well, what happens is after a while, well, you try to start with, you only start with 5 minutes. You know, you start with a small amount of material and hopefully that it'll work. So you don't want to go up there unarmed. And then as you keep doing it, and even the failure spots, they train you to survive up there. So you start working the house. Where are you from? What do you do? How long are you married? All that stuff, and engage the audience. That's how a lot of comics overcome what you're describing, I think. And then you keep, every time you say something funny in public or to your husband or your wife, write it down, put it in the act, build the act. That's my advice if anybody's interested who's listening to this.
So, and if you feel the terror of doing this, I have friends who are stand-ups too, and they talk about the anxiety they feel before they go
diarrhea,
on.
Diarrhea, hyperventilation.
How do you get through that? Do you worry before you do a set?
Yes, you are. You worry. You're pacing backstage. You're hoping the audience is not brain dead. You know, I mean, I've had sets where people don't even speak English, and I didn't even know it until the end. You know?
But they laugh, right?
Well, they're laughing. You know, you get over certain things. Like in the beginning, if I was working an audience and they were laughing, but there was one person who was not laughing, I would focus on that one person. And it took me a while to get over that and say, well, you know, and then I realized some of these people are on medication. They're sleepy. They didn't sleep that night. They're taking whatever the hell they are. You don't focus on those people. You focus on the ones.
The live ones.
Yeah. And if you make a name for yourself, then you have an advantage that people come to see you specifically. And that makes it easier for you, too. It gets easier.
Well,
you have to put in your time. It's not because you have to put 10,000 hours into something to be proficient at it. Well, that's true of this, and it's maybe even more with stand up because it's so difficult to do.
But when you started coming of age and people would come to see you, did it get easier then, or you still felt that little anxiety in your tummy?
No, it got a little easier, but I still felt the anxiety because then I felt I had to really hit the ball all the time. And, you know, doing headline sets, you're up there for an hour, 15 minutes. Maybe, you know, and you have to be funny for an hour and 15 minutes.
That's a lot.
It's hard. I don't do it much now because I have other interests. I have my playwriting and I'm writing essays and, you know, short stories, and I have my job. And I don't
the
need to do the stand-up, and I decided not to give myself the agita if I don't need to do it, you know?
Well, you're right. But what in a perfect world... Now, when you are known and you can do more things than you did before, what would you like to do? Do you want to concentrate on writing plays, writing stories, or what?
Well, I have to have something that's a little more active because I'm not an isolation type of person. You know, I came up with a big Italian family. I'm used to interacting with people. So to be a writer, you know, a lot of them are alcoholics for this very reason. And I'm not really into drinking.
No.
So to be isolated writing all the time, I have to have this is why I take workshops. One of the things I would recommend people to do when they don't know what to do with themselves is take a class in your area, wherever you are and however old you are. Take a class. Take an art history class. That's interesting to people, I think. If I wasn't working on The View, I would take classes, more classes in school.
And you really like that, right?
I love school. I do love school, yeah.
So you take classes in everything, like playwriting?
I would take photography classes. I would take playwriting classes. I would take art history classes. Those are the things I'm interested in. Mm. And, of course, politics, it occupies my mind constantly.
I know.
So that keeps me going, too.
Do you find the audience gets annoyed if you do a lot of politics? What do they want to see you do mostly?
Now, you mean on The View?
The View or wherever you're working.
Well, I don't do stand-up anymore, so It would have to be on The View, and they want to hear about Trump. I mean, we're in an election year, and our audience is mostly anti-Trumpers.
Uh-huh.
And so we talk, I mean, you know, we talk about the country, how, you know, the democracy is at stake this year. And we're hoping that people will realize that and go to the polls and not vote for him. But, you know,
but
you know, I just want to, we're talking to women, I think, mostly here. And I feel that people feel like if I'm not good at something right away, I should drop it. No, I think that's a bad attitude. I think you have to try and try again. If at first you don't succeed, you know that
uh-huh.
old saw?
Right.
I think that because I feel for women who say, well, I'm not good about it. I'm shy. Push it. Go see something. Go join something. Do it.
And you do that. And it's interesting because you are one of the few people I know who really like classes and get into
it. Oh,
I
love it. Yeah, I love school. I love to go to school and learn. Learning, you never stop learning, no matter how old you are, right?
No, and part of it is you learn to be fearless in many ways, which it takes to get through a lot of new stuff.
Yes, it takes a while to become, you know, me. But, I mean, I'm old now. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. It's taken me years and years to get to this point. But the trip has been interesting. You know, I've been at this for, like, you know, a good number of years.
And you've won a lot of hats.
You have, Joan.
I know. We've been at this forever.
But Joan, you know, for those listening, Joan and I are in our own little classes that we put together ourselves, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you're a very good writer. I mean, I keep encouraging you to write because you're very funny. You have a million stories about being on the radio with your listeners and the way you grew up and your family was, you know, your own unique way of expressing that, Joan. And I love it. You have to keep doing it.
Yeah, but we love that, and we love hearing about that, and everyone's got a story. Who doesn't
That's
love
right.
hearing about your family and the way they lived in tenement situations and the
oh, yeah.
aunts and, you know, how to be the most attractive girl on the street when you couldn't even put a brush through your hair? It was so wild.
Oh, my God. The hair. I know. You know, people have it a lot easier today. They have drugs to lose weight. They've got things to straighten their hair if their
right.
hair is out of control.
Right.
You know, they have phones that you can take anywhere. Like, I'm in my car now talking to you. You know, you have Google. I use Google every day. I'm constantly Googling things, you know.
Right.
And then email makes your life easier, too, because you can set up millions of appointments in 2 minutes. You know, in fact, that's one of my pet peeves is people do not answer fast enough. Either texting or email. It's like, stop it. Just answer now and stop 2 days later.
Well,
anyway, I think that people have a lot. You know, when I was doing stand-up, I'd have to go to Jersey, right?
Uh-huh.
I didn't have GPS. I didn't have a cell phone. I would get lost on the turnpike and going in the wrong direction. A lot of time, I never made the gig because I was going towards Pennsylvania. I mean, now that doesn't happen anymore. You know, even the cars are better. We've done a lot of progress, you know, in the
course.
World. And I think a lot of it is good.
No, a lot of it is good. And the thing is, I have a friend who's a wonderful performer, but she always says to me, how come you like the audience? I don't like the audience. I'm not interested
uh-huh.
in them. I'd say, well, that's
really?
Why you're not famous or you don't, you know, you don't like them. They know it and they're not going to like you. But,
absolutely. I've never heard of that. That is not a successful performer.
No, but
I mean, you know.
You like your audience.
You have to care about your audience. Why not? I mean, they're there to see you. They're the ones who give you the energy to keep going.
Yeah,
know?
But
and,
you're very nice to I just sort of watch you. And where a lot of performers are annoyed when people come over to them and you know, say, can I introduce you to my sister, my brother, my mother, whatever?
Can I take a picture for my mother loves? Why would I say no to someone? My mother loves you. Why would I say no to somebody like that?
I don't know. My husband did all the time. People
well,
would
your
come
husband
to,
was not a performer.
No, they would come over to the table and say, do you mind? And he would say, I mind. In a scary voice. Everyone
yeah,
would run.
Didn't. But you would be nice. I know. I've seen you, too. You're very nice to people.
Well, we're nice to them because we like it.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
Anyway, what else is new? You're working on your play.
Yeah.
Every day, do you write?
Well, now I'm Well, I have a long weekend because of Easter. So I'm going to try and get some. I'm working on that other project about my first ex-husband monologues that women have given me over the years, and that's a fun project because I sit with my. You don't even have to type. You don't even have to transcribe what people say anymore. This is what I'm trying to point out here. There's an app on your computer on your phone. I forget what it's called. You have to look this up. If you buy that app and put it on, people talk, and it transcribes it automatically.
I know. I love that.
You don't even have to listen and type. I know.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, you got a lot of exciting projects, and we're all looking forward to them. Thank you for taking the time.
Of course.
And drive carefully. Do not get out of your car, no matter what.
Oh, my God. I know. All right, Joan. Take care, dear.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Joan Hamburg, and that was Joy Behar. And we've got lots more after this. Stay tuned.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.